This show was first broadcast on Free FM 89.0, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access radio station. For more information on our station and our wide range of programs, visit freefm.org.nz.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3 or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271 3377. Buddhist Youth Association, respectful, beneficial, empowering. Once again, it's Sunday and we've come together to talk about the Buddha's teachings. Welcome, and I hope you've had a good week. Our subject over the last few weeks has been karma, that part of the law of cause and effect which involves an intentional agent and which gives the moral basis to Buddhist practice. Ethics in Buddhism has got nothing to do with the rules and regulations laid down by any sort of higher being, but depends on whether actions and their results bring suffering or happiness. And so there's a direct relationship between positive actions and happiness, and negative actions and misery. Create the one and you get the other. Talking about happiness and positive karma, before we go any further, let's establish some positive karma by setting a very positive motivation for being part of this program, as we usually do. The best motivation is to gain enlightenment, so we can be of the greatest benefit to all other beings. So try to set such a motivation. If that seems too great a task, at least set a gaining of liberation as your motivation. Thank you. Now back to karma. Last week we talked about the 10 actions that establish positive karma and happiness, and how throwing karma combines with completing karma to give you a good or bad rebirth, matched with either a pleasant or an unhappy life. Today we're going to start with the question of whether, once we've created the karma, we inevitably and always have to experience the result. You may remember that one of the characteristics of karma is that, unlike a seed which will eventually die, karma always stays active, even though it may be latent. No matter how long it stays on our mind stream, sooner or later it will meet the right conditions and then ripen into an experience for us. This is true for most karmas, and it is why we should do regular purification practices to weaken or eliminate the negative karma we've collected in our many past lives. However, in particular situations, actions can produce karma whose full result we may not have to experience. For instance, action in a dream. Say you dream about getting into a fight and killing someone. The karma is complete with the four factors: object, intention, action, and completion. You have an enemy, you want to kill him, you do so, and afterwards you feel happy about it. If this happens in real life, you would have accumulated a karma with the power to throw you into another life. And because it is a heavily negative karma, that life will, in all probability, be very miserable. But because the action is created in a dream, you're not fully in your right senses, so to speak, and the killing may well not have the same result as it would have in real life. Similarly, if we create an action unknowingly, we may not reap a full result. Often, for instance, without ever realizing it, we step on insects when we walk around outside. Do we get the full karmic result? Obviously, without an intention, it cannot be a complete karma. But even as an incomplete karma, the result is uncertain. Also, what about doing something accidentally? Say you're vacuuming, and before you know it, you have sucked a spider into the machine. Of course, you have no intention to harm the spider, but vacuums can be a bit uncontrollable if you're not careful. So this would not necessarily lead to a negative karmic experience. If you do something with a very low level of intention and don't repeat it, you also create an uncertain karma. As, for instance, getting involved in someone else's gossip just because they happen to be talking to you. You might stay in the conversation just long enough not to offend the other person, but then excuse yourself and avoid that kind of conversation again in the future. Other uncertain karmas are created by actions done mistakenly or absent-mindedly. You ask your neighbor if you can borrow one of her books, but by mistake you take another book instead. Very strictly, you could say that is stealing, but here it is doubtful whether you get the karma of stealing, even if your neighbor gets a bit annoyed. Of course, if you don't return the book, even though you took it by mistake or absent-mindedly, you would collect a stealing karma. I have spoken before about how when the communists invaded Tibet, some of the soldiers forced Buddhist students to shoot their teacher. In Tibetan Buddhism, one's teacher is regarded as even more important than the Buddha, and no student would even think of harming their teacher. So in such a situation, where the student is completely unwilling, whether they would experience any result from the action is doubtful. You also create an uncertain result if you do something with a neutral attitude, with remorse, and if you purify the karma. Having remorse and purifying karma are very important in not experiencing the full effects of a negative action. When we are young and heedless, we often create negative actions that we later come to regret. If we can generate a strong remorse for them and not repeat them, we will go some way to purifying their results and not experiencing suffering. As an example, when I was young, I remember when my father took us fishing for the first time. I was a bit averse to killing the fish, but later I came to like fishing, though thankfully I never had much luck catching any. Now I recognize that fishing creates heavy negative karma, and I feel both remorse and disgust for my previous actions. Although I can't say what the result of my actions will be, I hope the repulsion I now feel will at least go some way to alleviating the suffering and will help in assuring that I don't get involved in fishing in any of my coming lives. So there you have 10 karmas whose results are uncertain. Just to list them again, they come from actions that are done in a dream, unknowingly, accidentally, without intensity or repetition, mistakenly, absent-mindedly, unwillingly, with a neutral attitude, with remorse, and with purification. Talking about purification, we can purify our actions so that we don't have to experience their results at all. And now seems a good time to go through what we call the four opponent powers. These powers have the capacity to completely neutralize the results of any negative action if we apply them strongly enough. Even the five heinous actions, killing your father, your mother, an arhat, wounding a Buddha, and creating a schism within the Sangha community, can be purified by these four. The first is the power of the object. Our negative actions are created in relation to two objects, the highly realized beings like Buddhas, Bodhisattvas, and Arhats, and other sentient beings, like our friends and relations, or even animals. So in our confession of negativities, we need to correct our spoiled relationship with these objects. In the same way, perhaps, that if you harm your friend, you might apologize and do something to make the person feel easy with you again. To correct our attitude to the highly realized ones, we take refuge in them. So we might recite the refuge prayer. I go for refuge to the Buddha. I go for refuge to the Dharma. I go for refuge to the Sangha. Then to correct our relationship with other sentient beings, we develop the mind that wishes to benefit them in the best way possible. In other words, to help them gain enlightenment, to be free from all their suffering. So then we can recite the lines, by practicing giving and other perfections, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. This refuge and generating the wish to attain enlightenment to help all others is combined into one verse, which reads, I go for refuge to the Buddha, I go for refuge to the Dharma, I go for refuge to the Sangha. By practicing giving and other perfections, may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. Repeating this 3 times impresses our intention on our mind and makes sure our progress is in a sure and safe direction. For as Buddhists, we believe that the direction the Buddha pointed out to us in the Four Noble Truths will lead us to freedom from all suffering and the attainment of long-lasting peace. We believe that if we follow this direction, which is indicated by the Buddha Dharma, we will eventually attain our goal with the help of those who have attained realizations on the path, the Sangha. And by reinforcing the intention to benefit all beings through our practice, we counteract any tendencies that steer our minds away from the love and compassion we need to develop towards every being if we want to reach enlightenment. Now, the second power of the four opponent powers is the power of regret. Obviously, if we create and rejoice in some negative action, it will be impossible to avoid its results, even though we might ardently wish to. So, for instance, if I happily cheat on my taxes, thinking I would keep my riches for myself, it probably indicates that I think that in the future I will not be poor. But the very fact that by avoiding paying taxes, I am stealing from all the people in the country, means that in the future I will land up in a poverty-stricken situation. As long as I rejoice that the government can't catch me and keep on fiddling my tax return, it will be impossible for me to escape future poverty, no matter what other purification practices I do. To purify our actions, we must regret them. This puts a counteractive force on our mind and helps us to regard such actions as anathema in the future. It helps in weakening the strength of those actions on our mind. Rejoicing and regret are like opposites. The one strengthens the force on our mind, while the other weakens it. So while rejoicing is important when we create positive actions, regret is very important in purifying. In fact, one text says there's no purification if there's no regret. To implement this force fully, think of all the negative actions you've created in the past, all the negative tendencies on your mind at present, and all the negative actions you might commit in the future. Then develop strong regret by recognizing that all these negativities will only bring suffering in the future. In previous programs, we've gone through the 10 non-virtuous actions and their results, and if most of us cast our minds back, we will see that we've created such actions trillions of times in this and past lives, so countless seeds of suffering are awaiting us. The strength and sincerity of our regret for those actions determines how much we will purify them, and that regret itself depends on the extent to which we recognize the suffering we will be in for if we don't purify those karmas. We don't have to remember and regret each and every action. In the same way that you don't have to know every tree in a forest to burn the whole forest down, just regretting all the actions generally, we can purify them all. Then the third opponent force is the power of the antidote. Here, we consciously do something to counteract the negative imprints of our harmful actions. This can be any positive action, like reading texts, reciting sutras, saying mantras, meditating, especially on the nature of reality, making offerings, or practicing generosity. The most powerful purification practices are meditating on the nature of reality and the development of the mind to attain enlightenment to be of the greatest benefit to all beings. Of course, to generate such a mind, one needs boundless love and compassion, so meditations on these is also a powerful antidote to negative karma. When creating the positive action, remember especially that the person doing the action itself, and the object of the action have no independent inherent existence. They do not exist apart from depending on causes and conditions, parts, and the mind that labels them. This remembrance makes the purification practice even more powerful, because it counteracts the usual deluded ways of grasping at reality that led us to commit the negative actions in the first place. The fourth opponent is the power of commitment. Now say I go out fishing, catch a few fish, but then later regret it. I do some purification practices and feel that I've rid my mind of the results of my previous actions. But then my mate comes along and invites me out on his boat for a day's fishing. If I think it's okay to take him up on his offer because I can just purify again later, I would hardly be purifying my actions, would I? Once we've developed regret for an action and done purifying practices, we have to make a commitment not to do the action again. Of course, we may not be able to keep such a commitment for the rest of our lives, but if we really regret the action, we have to be prepared to avoid it for a certain length of time at least. For instance, if I'm an habitual liar, I may not be able to definitely say I will not lie for the rest of my life, but I can commit to not speaking untruths for the next 2 days, for instance. Then, if I stay mindful about my commitment, I may well find it possible to speak only the truth, or at least keep my mouth shut, for 48 hours. And that will help purify my previous lying. Once I've kept the commitment for 2 days, I can commit to do it again for another 2 days, and then another two, and so on, slowly training my mind until eventually I can give up the negative action altogether. Of course, committing to giving up a negative action for life is excellent, and this is what we can do if the action is, for instance, something like going fishing or hunting. Once we recognize the intense suffering these cause to other creatures and in the future to ourselves, it should not be too difficult to say we will never do them again. So those are the four opponent powers. The power of the object correcting our bad relationship with both highly realized beings and ordinary beings through taking refuge and generating the mind of enlightenment to best help others. The power of regret, seeing the suffering our negative actions will cause us and others. The power of the antidote, doing something positive to counteract the negative actions. And the power of commitment, promising not to do the negative action again for as long as we can keep that promise. Now let's use meditation on the four opponent powers to purify some of our negative karma. Please sit comfortably and focus your mind on your breath, letting all thoughts arise and subside without clutching onto any of them. Now imagine the Buddha in front of you, radiant and golden, his right hand touching the earth, his left holding a begging bowl filled with nectar. To correct our relationships with high and ordinary beings, take refuge and generate the mind of enlightenment. Repeat after me. I go for refuge to the Buddha. I go for refuge to the Dharma. I go for refuge to the Sangha. By practicing generosity and other perfections, may I attain enlightenment for the sake of all living beings. Now recite it again. I go for refuge to the Buddha. I go for refuge to the Dharma. I go for refuge to the Sangha. By practicing generosity and other perfections, may I attain enlightenment for the sake of all living beings. And once again, I go for refuge to the Buddha. I go for refuge to the Dharma. I go for refuge to the Sangha. By practicing generosity and other perfections, may I attain enlightenment for the sake of all living beings. Now think of some action or actions you've done that you recognize as negative. Develop regret, seeing that the tendencies left on your mind by such actions will definitely lead you to suffering in the future. Now let's meditate on loving-kindness, compassion to all beings as the power of the antidote. Imagine at your heart chakra in the middle of your chest a beautiful ball of light, which is your love and compassion. Imagine it grows to fill your whole body and mind, giving you all the long-term happiness you can want and freeing you from suffering. Now imagine all your loved ones on either side of you and all your friends and acquaintances behind you. They all want to be free of difficulties and find happiness just like you. Send your light out to them, imagining it fills them, bringing freedom from their difficulties and every long-term happiness that they could want. Now imagine all other beings surrounding you in every direction, even those who are difficult to get on with. All want happiness and don't want suffering, so send your light out to them, imagining that it frees all from their suffering and brings them every happiness.
Thank you.
Now, before the visualized Buddha, think again of the actions you want to purify and make a promise not to commit those actions again for as long as you think you can keep such a promise. The Buddha is very pleased with you and sinks into you, and you become one with the Buddha's body, speech, and mind. Think that all those negative karmas have now been purified. Now come out of meditation. Please try your best to keep the promise you made for the length of time of the commitment. If you inadvertently break the commitment, just admit it and practice the four opponent powers again, taking the commitment and trying to keep it once more. Now time is up and we must go. Thank you for joining us today, and please do so again next week. If you can't quite remember the purification practice, don't worry, we will repeat it when we meet up again. Until then, goodbye.
For more episodes of this Community Access Radio show, please visit freefm.org.nz. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this podcast possible by funding the Access Internet Radio Project.